The Yahoo episode is here, long awaited, anticipated, asked for, and now delivered. Yes, the CEO of Yahoo is here with us to deep dive into the state of the company. The Yahoo episode on Big Technology Podcast is coming up right after this.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by Alumni Ventures. Invest with confidence. Discover the power of venture investing with Alumni Ventures, America's largest venture firm for individual investors. Learn more at av.vc.
Welcome to Big Technology Podcast, a show for cool-headed, nuanced conversation of the tech world and beyond. We're here. We're in it. It's the Yahoo episode. We have Jim Lanzone. He's the CEO of Yahoo. And also Ranjan Roy is here with us, a rare appearance on a Wednesday show. I want to welcome both of you. First of all, welcome, Jim. Great to see you.
Good to see you again, Alex.
And welcome, Ranjan. Ranjan, you kind of kicked this off. I think that we were talking about this on a Friday show, and you mentioned something like Yahoo is the most underappreciated company in the entire tech world. And you expressed your excitement. We had so many people write in talking about how they were interested in a Yahoo episode as well. So I'm curious to hear, just to start off, and then I'll let you ask the first question to Jim, but set us up here. Like, talk a little bit about your passion for Yahoo and why you thought this was an episode we had to do.
Yeah, for me, whether it's media, whether it's technology, whether it's news, there's so many stories that we all obsess over day to day and week to week. Meanwhile, Yahoo is the number one news site in the country still per traffic, number two in sports, number two in email, number one in finance. 8 out of 10 Americans visit a Yahoo property every month. Like, the numbers, when I've heard them, are astounding. Yet we, you know, spend time on the minutiae of tiny media startups or tiny tech startups. So the fact that Yahoo, you know, was taken private, is being worked on, and different strategies are being implemented, which I'm excited to learn more about, I think is the most important media and tech story around right now. And I'm excited to learn more along with our listeners.
Media and tech. Okay, so now we're really setting up bigger than AI.
Come on.
So let's bring Jim in.
I'm sure there's going to be some AI in it.
So Jim, when you hear that, do you think, what do you think? Because obviously you're coming in, you were like pretty humble getting started, talking about basically, I think there's a quote from you saying that every single product needs work in Yahoo, and you're going to work hard to revitalize the business. So like, it's interesting to hear the contrast, right? Like, Ranjan and I here are talking about like reading the stats and saying this is, you know, huge and underappreciated, and you're like, this is a turnaround story. So can those both be true?
I do think that they're actually both true. I've said that before when you know, asked about coming here and what was in the decision. It does have a lot of the trappings of a big turnaround. Otherwise, you know, it, given all the things Ranjan said, it wouldn't have been spun out of Verizon at the price it was, which was around $5 billion. You know, for something that's still a top five property, probably has been top five every month as long as the internet has existed. And if you were to take the name off of it, I've said before, with this many users, this much revenue, this much profit, you know, what would that be worth? How would you think about that company? At the same time, it's been through the ringer, you know, over the years, right? A lot of time. As a struggling public company, eventually sold to Verizon, spent 5 or 6 years there. In a lot of ways, both things are true. And that's part of what I love about it. And that's part of the challenge of it. But that's also why we're humble about it at the same time.
You know, in some ways, it kind of mirrors the story of the web. I mean, you know, I was thinking about, like, why do we care about Yahoo? And you know, in many ways, like, Yahoo was maybe the original way, at least it was for me, where people started accessing the web pre-Google, right? And the company still has all this size, yet I guess financially it can be tough to make money on the web. So you have all the traffic, you've had ad tech, right, to help make money off of that, and that's gone through a transformation. But just from the fundamental level, like, can you still make money on the web, and what is traffic worth these days?
Well, I think it's all a matter of perspective. You know, there's a difference between the $1 trillion-plus companies and what they make. And you can be a very healthy, thriving business at a different size company. And you know, search is, I used to work in search for a long time, and I'm back at it now. That's one way of making money from a large amount of traffic. ads are obviously another, subscription, lead gen, e-commerce. I mean, those are probably the main five. One of the big things that we have going for us is not only size, but also, you know, the majority of our impressions and our are from logged in users. So we have a huge amount of first party data. People are coming direct to us. And so that's another, you know, big difference, is that people choose Yahoo Finance, they choose Yahoo Sports, they choose Yahoo News and Mail. And so, you know, we're not thirsty for traffic and out there trying to get it in unnatural ways. We're lucky to have people coming directly to us. The days of when Yahoo was the one-stop portal is probably something to work your way back to, if that were something that anybody, should be trying to achieve at this point. Our strategy is much more to lean into our brands, and, you know, we've hired general managers to run each one of these brands as an independent business. They're our cousins, they're related. People do go from site to site and app to app. But they each have different ways to monetize, and they're in their given verticals. They'd have different audiences, and the strength of the company is actually to lean into that, but not to compare ourselves to Facebook or Google or something much larger. It's I always say we're here to compete against ourselves. It's our growth rate versus ourselves and where we are tomorrow versus yesterday. And there's a lot of right sizing that has to go, to get the company from where it was as a standalone company or part of Verizon to where we need to be as a new standalone company going forward, which is a lot of the work we're doing behind it. I think there's, we have the very healthy, thriving audience at the top of the funnel, and then there's other ways that we, monetize them as we move them through.
Can you walk through what does verticalization look like across different properties, whether it's finance or sports? I think that's very interesting, how the general manager strategy versus that kind of centralized approach that it sounds like things used to be operated under. But what does that look like in one vertical versus another?
This is a lesson I learned 13 years ago when I became the CEO of CBS Interactive, which was under CBS Corporation, but we had multiple companies in there, including former public companies like Sportsline and CNET. And we had little ones like Last.fm. And so the first year, my background's in product. So the first year, I was like, let's go, and tried to run every product myself or with the central team, and realized very quickly that that was not going to scale, that the only way to do it was to develop what we eventually called the federal and state model, where every business, every brand has its own GM, governor, and they have their own economy, culture, location a lot of times, monetization. And what you want to do is let them hire people who are talented and entrepreneurial and let them run running their business. And our job in federal at the central level of this portfolio is to provide expertise and leverage at the center, maybe provide services that are generic that you don't want to do more than once. But every one of those businesses then has a GM, has a head of product, has a head of technology, usually has a head of content, a head of design, and you let them go. And I'll accept inefficiencies at the edges in order to let them own the relationship with their customer and be able to develop quickly and with the expertise developed, for that. And so what you then wind up finding is you then have people joining you who love or join for the love of the game of that vertical. And so, so Ryan Spoon, who came in, ran ESPN product for 8 years, BetMGM, So Rare, he is the GM and president of Yahoo Sports. Tapan Bhatt, who way back was Jeff Weiner's number two at Yahoo back in the day, but he was the COO of NerdWallet. And so he's the head of Yahoo Finance, and then hired another person from the fintech industry as the head of product. Kat Downs Mulder is the GM of Yahoo News and Home, and she was the chief product officer and managing director of the Washington Post. And so down the line, you get these people. I brought in some of my search guys for the search team, et cetera. So you have dedicated experts who are the best at what they do. My job is to support them, maybe play dentist on their plans and some of their processes and people, but otherwise, like, I'm there to let them run.
How does the legacy Yahoo tech stack influence that verticalized federal state model? Like, are they able to build whatever they want? Does that create a huge challenge or headache?
There is a platform that everybody is built on. But it's very nimble, enabling them to really control their own destiny and to build what they want to build. And so we do have things like trying to be more consistent with fonts or with, certain ways that we render things. But otherwise, I actually like them to be independent and to let Yahoo Finance really super serve finance users who are really loyal to that product, who have certain needs. In fact, it's probably a good time to back up one more step, which is when we got here, the first thing to do is to not overreact and to really understand what makes Yahoo tick, what makes all these people who use the product so are so loyal to it, trust it so much over the years. But at a certain point, you do step back and say, if the average public company, I think I heard the other day, is only around 10 and a half years, and we've been here 29 in various formations, what is the mission today? What is our reason to exist today? And why have people been so loyal to it over time, including the fact that, they miss search, which is kind of something you can't undo, right? That, and we could talk about that, but the move to Google in June of 2000, was its own thing that time was spent trying to undo, but at this point is not a realistic job. Like, we can still participate in search and make good money from search, but Google is Google at this point. And so if you go back, the original Yahoo was the guide to the World Wide Web. And Alex, to your point, what happened was, the internet was created and then Mosaic and Netscape was created to let you access it, but nobody knew how to get to anything. And so that's what Yahoo was for. In our best versions of ourselves, we are still that trusted guide to every one of these vertical categories. As we think about other categories that we could be in going forward, we would think about the same way, where is that trusted guide needed to help people accomplish their goals, big or small, when they come to Yahoo? And not to be judgmental about that. It could be the weather, or it could be trying to make $1 million, or it could be saying your March Madness brackets this week, which I was just doing before we got online here. It could be any of those things. Our job is to compress the time it takes for you to accomplish those goals, and that is very different vertical by vertical. What you're trying to accomplish in Yahoo Finance is different than news, is different than sports, is different in search or mail. And that's the framework that we've built out to attack everything that we're doing.
Yeah, kind of, it does build on that original portal mission, right? If you would go to the portal to figure out what the sports score was or who won, read the game story, find out how your stocks are doing, and then your content businesses, are natural evolutions of that. So it seems like you're planning to think of new areas to expand into that you could play a similar role.
Well, I don't even think of them as content. We have content.
Yes, I want to actually talk to you about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
If you think about what we do, and again, Yahoo CEOs used to be beat up about whether they're a media company or a technology company. And
yeah, for some reason, the media loved asking that question, which is, I think, silly. It's hard to be pure one or the other. Go ahead.
The real answer is we're a product company. Mm. And we deploy media to help people accomplish their goals. And we use technology to deliver all of it. But, the real underpinning of Yahoo are unique data sets, superior aggregation, and then having content anchors that provide context for everything that you're doing. And so those are really the three underpinnings of every vertical that we have. But, setting your fantasy lineup is not content. Setting up your stock portfolio and checking it and making trades is not necessarily content. And you can kind of go down the line and understand, of course, news is, although things like, weather is, there are other parts of news that aren't. Obviously, mail and search are not media and content in the traditional sense. So I think we deploy media to help people be successful, but I don't think that's all we do.
Right. And this is sort of one of the key insights that you're bringing into the company is that, and maybe it was there before, but you certainly seem to be enhancing it, is we're looking at all these struggles in the content industry or content journalism, news, media, pick your noun, right? And a lot of them seem to have been betting entirely on just the stories. And I look through every vertical that you guys have, and it seems like it's more. For instance, in finance, you have Yahoo Finance Plus, which has data and research tools and 2 million monthly users. And I read that it's growing double digit percentages year over year. And then you, with Yahoo Sports, you you bought the peer-to-peer gambling site Wager. So it's like finance plus extra services. It's sports plus, you know, potentially some gambling. You know, you look through it. Each one of these content verticals has something more. And it looks like you've also, in Yahoo Finance, scaled back advertising 40%, which, like, if you think about a traditional quote-unquote content play, no one would ever do that. So
well,
that,
yield went up, actually. So there was a logic to that.
Right. So, but I guess, like, to me, is that sort of your answer of, like, what running a successful business on the web today really requires? It's like both that content hook, but then also some sort of deeper engagement with the audience that goes beyond just reading the story.
Yeah, and again, we're lucky to be in verticals and own products where we're not chasing traffic. You know, 86% of U.S. internet users hit Yahoo every month. I think it's 36.5 billion minutes per month just in the U.S. So I do think that that's common of every major consumer property, that there's a top of the funnel that you have to nourish. You know, you have to have users, they have to be deeply engaged. You have to have them coming in at a certain frequency. Right. And I think those are the unit economics of the user side. We talked about the financial ones. And that really is making sure that you're at the top of your game in serving their user needs. And that sounds like, you know, cliche, but that's absolutely the job. And over time, though, that changes always. So you're never done. It's like painting the Golden Gate Bridge, which is why I actually think Yahoo can be around another 29 years. It's like the need, people's goals are not going away. And our first job is in the verticals that we already own to do an A-plus job of delivering against that in the most modern, effective way possible. And that's all the work, you know, I think that we're doing now. We also could very easily play in new verticals or go more seriously into them. Like, if you look at the rankings, we're number one in beauty and fashion, even though we don't really have a really dedicated product to that. Things like health, travel, these are all places that I think we have a right to play, local. There's so many things that we could do. And I think that the name of the game would be the same in every one of those.
So where does the Yahoo brand fit in here? You'd mentioned bringing on a new CMO, head of comms.
Yeah.
But you had also said at the beginning that any one of these brands, almost if you remove the Yahoo brand, also stands on its own in terms of the numbers, in terms of users and revenue as a pretty significant business. So how do you see the Yahoo brand evolving, or what are you trying to do with it right now to unify everything?
Well, step one is to lean into the individual brand. So you have to nail that first, given where we're, you know, again, the days of a one-stop portal were a long time ago. I mean, for the internet in general, that's not how it's used at this point. But I do think the notion that if you really understand your users and you really personalize Yahoo the way it could be personalized, if you do deploy AI, which we're already doing, you know, across every one of these verticals, it's already embedded into the product, so we're building behind that. I do think that the notion that we could anticipate user needs and deliver what they want, in the least amount of work possible, is another way you could, you know, you may say it's like a portal, but you're kind of coming out for a different reason, but it kind of gets you back to the same place. And we do need the Yahoo brand to be really strong in support of those brands. And then eventually, if you do it right, then the Yahoo brand itself can have its own place. And I think coming back at that in a slowly but surely over time, one of the things I've found since I got here is that, and maybe this goes to some of the retro vintage flavor that's really in society right now. There's a lot of latent love for the brand. I think people are rooting for it deep down. They would love to see us be able to, you know, kind of get it back to a good spot. And, you know, we have to reward that faith with great products. But I think if we do, I think that there's an opportunity for that. By the way, one really small example is we just dipped our toe in the water at South By. I don't know if you guys know what Pool Suite is.
No, what is it?
It's this hipster retro brand. It's almost impossible to describe. It's like a lifestyle brand that this guy Marty in the UK developed. I mean, you might have pictures of people drinking martinis and Jaguars. You might have pink flamingos floating in pools. He's selling a sunscreen and does like a huge amount of revenue selling vacation sunscreen that he developed. It's a vibe, this brand. And he reached out and we did a collab party at South by Southwest rooftop, 12 hours, 12 to 12. And it was the highest number of RSVPs they've ever had for anything. I think that there's that kind of, there is a little latent love there for the brand if we reward it the right way.
Yahoo is vintage and retro now. I like it.
Modern vintage is what I would call it.
We made it 25 minutes in when AI has finally been brought up. I was curious, are you saying the vision is that the next kind of iteration of the Yahoo promise and brand is some kind of AI-driven personalized experience, given the stronger each individual vertical gets? Is that the larger vision, or?
That's definitely part of it. I think that's a destination, though, for it. In the meantime, you guys have talked a lot about this, that, you know, in the near future, the most common way for AI to be deployed, if you're not talking ChatGPT or some of the, some of the companies that have taken off, is going to be, you know, for core services. And how is it supporting that, both inside the company and then for consumers? So, you know, going back a year, we launched AI into mail to help you write the mail, you know, write your email, edit it, search for it, summarize it. It's deeply embedded into fantasy sports, believe it or not, to help you set your lineup without you actually doing any work. You got to pay a subscription tier for that product. Things like smack talking emails that go out on Mondays after the games on Sundays, summarizing that week's games, making fun of people for the name of their team. That was all happening through AI. There's a lot more happening with that. Finance, obviously, helping you invest more smartly. So every one of these verticals has it. Obviously, we have search too, and so we have our Microsoft relationship. That goes back a number of years and will go a number of years into the future. But you know, bringing that into search is obviously happening is a no-brainer. So what I'd say is it's deployed across everything we're doing, and then inside the company as well, like ways to make us more efficient. Whether it's customer service through to engineering.
I definitely want to talk about that search bar, right, and that partnership with Microsoft. So why don't we take a quick break? And after the break, we're going to talk about, I'm looking at Yahoo right now. The top bar right there is search, and that's an important piece of real estate for you guys, and I guess for Microsoft as well. So let's take a break and talk about what's going to happen with that thing right after this.
Hi, my name is Ryan Roslansky, and I'm the CEO of LinkedIn. And I'll let you in on a little secret. There is no one formula for success. It's all about paving your own path. That's why each week on my podcast, The Path, I talk to the world's top leaders about how they navigate the twists and turns of their unique careers. Then I give you actionable steps you can take to apply those lessons to your own career. Tune into new episodes weekly and follow The Path wherever you get your podcast to never miss an episode.
And we're back here on Big Technology Podcast with Jim Lanzone, CEO of Yahoo. Great to have you back, Jim.
Good to be here.
Ranjan Roy is here with us as well. The Yahoo episode, we're doing it.
The Yahoo episode.
Thank you for my giant Yahoo coffee mug.
And a Yahoo football helmet in the background that's
yes.
That is vibing pretty strongly as well.
Jim got the memo.
BYU vibe to it, but yeah.
So before the break, we were talking about search and obviously, like, you guys will have decisions to make on that search bar. We just, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but Gartner had this number out that said traditional search was going to decline 25% in a year and a half or a year and three quarters by 2026. And I interviewed the Gartner folks and we talked about it. And their big thought there was, like, it's going to take basically big platforms with a lot of search real estate to say, we don't want traditional search anymore. We're going to implement generative AI to make this move happen. Because I was like looking at it and saying, what are you talking about? Like Bing hasn't made Google budge at all. But their idea is basically like big platforms, whether that's Apple or somebody else, might say, well, we much prefer to serve generative AI answers to our audience or our users versus like the traditional link project. So what are you going to do? And what are the considerations that go into a decision like that? Because I imagine you're evaluating it and you have the right partner in Microsoft. So walk us through a little bit about what's going to happen there.
I think it's a little more simple for us. And it's funny, I definitely did a deep dive after you all had that had that discussion, and I read everything about it. And I mean, I believe they were saying it's based on decisions Apple was going to make in 2026, and they're projecting a lot with that.
Yes, it's a lot of things have to go right.
A lot of extrapolation.
I spent my first 10 years in search, including Ask Jeeves, where we were part of the turnaround team there. So natural language and all those things are near and dear to me. Direct answers, all that. Look, for our search, there are people who start their search experiences with Yahoo. A huge number of people are searching because they're there for all the other services that we have. Our job is to be awesome so that the next time they're with us and think, yeah, I may as well just search a Yahoo, we reward that. That's actually a really proven way to grow search. I've done that in the past. So in order to do that, obviously AI answers are going to be a big part of it. Number one, because I do believe it's growing the category. I don't think it's a one-for-one replacement for every type of search that's happening. I think that what we used to call smart answers, what Google calls one box, is already bringing that directly into the page. So you're getting both types of search. I think that's way more common than people who are attacking Google and Bing are acknowledging. I think you kind of can do both in the search UI. We're going to do this. We obviously need to do the same thing. And this goes way back for me because our team at Ask in that 2003 to 2007 period, we really led the way on direct answers and getting beyond template ranks. That's kind of what we were known
vision.
For.
Right.
And yeah, but that was, well, that was very different than the original Ask, which was natural language that really couldn't really answer anything because it was just so early. It was just too early. Ours was pulling from structured databases to bring, weather or, lyrics or whatever's going to be right into the page. And that really is a great way to use AI generated answers right now. I mean, including if you type in how does Perplexity AI work into Google with Gemini lit up and into Perplexity, it is very interesting who gets the answer right.
And who gets it right?
Who gets it right?
They pull it from Perplexity. Perplexity is pulling it from Reddit and some other places.
Oh my God. That's fascinating.
It's so broad. Search is so broad. And I definitely think it is incrementally added to the category. You're now asking things you wouldn't have asked a search engine. And it is creating answers the search engine was not able to do, right? By predicting the next word, et cetera, from its database. So look, for Yahoo, we're definitely incorporating it in everything we do, including search. And I think it's as much an opportunity as a threat to the search category. They're both true.
Wait, can you walk through, you said your experience at Ask Jeeves was a turnaround. What was what was the turnaround experience? And I guess, were there any valuable lessons that you're bringing to the Yahoo story now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so our new team got there at the end of 2001 after the market had crashed. I think I was announced on 9/11 as joining as the head of product, and our stock was under $1. It had been crushed, and then the company had gone. I think had to remove 75% of its employees. So it was definitely a turnaround. It wasn't profitable, and so and was doing too many things. There were eight different things from enterprise search to consumer search that was trying to do, including a bunch of other things. And so it was my first lesson in focus, in doing what you're really great at, and the fact that if you have a large user base, that's product has seen better days, where the the team could probably be improved, where the brand had seen better days. If you just focus on crushing it for your users, for the users you already have, that actually will pay off over time in improvements in retention and frequency. And search, that's linear. In 2002, we switched to Google AdWords. I think we were the first ones to do that, which helped us become profitable and set our stock on I think we 50X'd that thing from there. And then we sold to IAC in February of 2005. And so that lesson of you know, huge audience with all these things that could be improved is like the core basis for a turnaround is something I took to CBS Interactive, where we had that problem across a number of our properties. If you do that, you then make your own fuel to invest. And at Ask, that was definitely into investment, even deeper into search innovation. At CBS, it was we actually launched CBS All Access, which became Paramount Plus years later. The first plan we introduced for that was November of 2011. It launched in October of 2014, not as how do you save the streaming future. It was much more as a freemium product to introduce a subscription layer on top of our free layer. And we funded that ourselves from within CBS Interactive based on the performance of the other brands that had been part of the turnaround. So, yeah, I mean, that was part of when I started talking to Apollo about Yahoo before they bought it. You know, that was my thesis. I was like, for the right price, I think it's the mother of all turnarounds. Even though, again, to our earlier conversation, it's already doing a lot of revenue. It's already very profitable. But getting it to the growth trajectory that would make you a sustainable company for the future is really the trick here. And that's the work we're doing now. But based on a lot of the lessons I had in the past.
Let me ask you about private equity, okay? Because like the public perception of private equity firms is not very, very, unless you're an investor in them, is not very positive. I think like most people think that a private equity firm is kind of like comes in and vultures out all the potential profit and then, basically leaves the skeleton with all the money and that's the end of the company. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think that's...
How's it different
really
here?
Broad strokes, because yeah. I have friends at other private equity firms. Definitely, they all have their playbook, and some of those playbooks involve what you're talking about. Some involve putting in their own people to drive their specific operational playbook. Forget just the reductions, but doing that. My only personal experience with private equity has been my experience with Apollo, which has been great since day one, since my first conversation with them. Through to them buying it and then turning around and recruiting me in to then the last 2+ years working for them has been great. I mean, again, we've been on the same page about the thesis the entire time. I should say one of the benefits for us has been that it's one of the fastest returning deals they ever had. So, we did a number of deals to sell things that we owned. We had a CDN business that we then merged with another company to become a public company. We've returned a lot of cash to them that lets them invest in the upside here. So it's just been a different situation, I think. And then I think we probably have tripped them out a bit in our new team, being proactive with making sure that we have the right size company, the right platforms that we're supporting, and they haven't had, whether they were or not going to come to us to say, let's reduce these costs. The costs have been naturally reduced here in a strategic way, not to save money because we didn't, we've been making a lot of money. So it hasn't been for that reason. It's been to strategically position us for the future with more, doing more what we should be doing and less of, the thing, everything that we inherited. So maybe this is a one-off in terms of that experience, but Reed Raymond, who's the chairman, and then David Samber, Lee Solomon, Yifei Wang, who are the other three main Apollo people involved, have just been great with us. We involve them deeply on a daily and weekly basis to how we're doing things, not with a gun to our head, but because they're helpful. So I don't have a dramatic.
No, that's a good answer.
I'm sure if we screwed up, it'd be different, but things have been going pretty well so far.
Well, what does success look like then? Because if you're saying, again, if each individual property can stand alone on its own, if as a company that's still profitable, it's still growing at least in the way that you want it to, what does success on the turnaround look like then? What's the bigger 2 to 3 year vision, or whenever an IPO would be coming, how does this get pitched to the markets?
Well, look, the only pitch you can make, I always say, as you know, companies are bought, not sold, right? And so the thing that we have to do, no matter what the outcome is here, and whether that's all of Yahoo is acquired, parts of Yahoo are acquired by different people, we have an IPO, like whatever those are, that the task for my team doesn't change, which is it's about growth. It's about growth on the user side, the revenue side, the EBITDA side, profit side. It's weird because I've founded two companies, but I've spent the majority of my career now in public companies. And clearly what you need is sustainable growth over time, right? Companies can go public too early. They can be in a position where they're struggling to make quarters. Like that's not the right place for anybody. So I think we're, this is the first time Yahoo's been private since 1995. And we're taking advantage of that to build this out the right way. We made a lot of changes. We're still digesting a lot of those changes with the puts and takes to get to the other side. We're investing in every product that we own in a major way with an awesome team. And that's the plan right now. I think you will see us continue to be aggressive in terms of trying to figure out what we can add to it, which would be in two ways. It could be a major deal that adds a vertical or adds a major new product. It could also be, we've done, Alex, as you point out, some of the smaller deals to enhance products that we're building, get us there faster. And again, we're not acquihires, but actually products that we think are important to what we're doing. I think you'll continue to see that. And so we're, we're building this transformer here to be a healthy fighting machine in the future.
Well, is there, for that kind of vision of sustainable growth, is there some magic formula you think of around kind of advertising revenue versus premium subscription revenue? Or, because obviously every media company is always asking itself that, what's the ideal combination? Is there some high level goal you have around that or insight?
Again, I think it's just different. If you are a premium content brand, then you have a right to have a percentage of your users convert to subscription. If you're super premium, maybe you're only subscription, and there may be perhaps a limit, depends if you're Spotify or Netflix versus The Economist or The Atlantic or The New Yorker, what your scale can be for that. For a company like ours, we're monetizing in all five of the ways I mentioned earlier, right? And it's always a funnel. Top of the funnel is the broadest. It's the most free, and you're monetizing that audience in certain ways. Down funnel, you earn the right to convert them into premium products, and just subscriptions could be one. Sport, betting is another way you might think about that, but you convert them down that pathway. That's really how you run these kinds of properties. Or at least the majority of them, right? Things like search are different. We do have a subscription layer for every product that we offer. I think investing more in that and understanding what super fans of our products really want and need is part of what we talk about every day. I have a board meeting Thursday. It's a part of our deck. So we are actively thinking about that in every one of these verticals and building behind it. It's not done overnight. This is always going to be something that took a little while to get everything right. We have the kind of team that there are two types of people. There are people who are like, they see this possibility of turning Yahoo around and where this could get to and the brand, and they run towards the fire and they want to be a part of that. And they would be proud to be part of that outcome. And there's people who are more conservative and don't, that's not for them. It really is a Rorschach test between the two types of people as we're recruiting people in here. But our team is super energized behind all that and working like crazy to do it.
So as we've been talking, I've been thinking about something that you said, 15 minutes ago, and I can't get out of my mind, which is that when you apply AI in search, you can have normal search results and AI generated search results. So I'm just kind of curious to hear from your perspective, because you also mentioned that you're private. You have some leeway to try some things and potentially even say, all right, we're going to lose some money in the short term to try to make a better product. Whereas something like a Google doesn't have that leeway, right? That's been the innovator's dilemma for them. How do you choose when to do generative AI versus traditional search? And in which use cases do you, is it sort of dynamic? Is it a percent you roll out? Like, talk us through that decision.
I love it. It's funny. I always used to say, because, you know, back, 15, 20 years ago, there was only search. I mean, it was such the heart of the game, pre-social media, pre-mobile. Remember when I got to CBS Interactive in 2011, only 6% of our traffic was mobile. It was just so early for so many of these things. And so everybody had an opinion on search. And I would always think, it's so easy on your side of the search box. If you think about what we're dealing with on this side and all the different things we have to do to get your answer right in the blink of a second, or to give you the right resources, or to give you related searches to, you know, to iterate on your query, like all these things. So I automatically just, in my product nerd side, just go to that. It depends on the query. And that's going to unleash a different tree structure for what you might present and what you might do, that as you follow that thing down, it just continues to evolve. And again, I, you know, the fact that someone would spend 21 minutes on Perplexity versus just trying to get to a navigational query is one example, or a quick answer, what time it is, what's the weather, how does Perplexity work, as another, sports scores as being one, or the, you know, the history of something as another, or it's just, it is all different. And I just look at generative AI as another tool to deploy. And this is clearly, whether it's Bing or ChatGPT standalone or Perplexity standalone with hitting all the databases they're hitting, or now Apple and Google and how they're going to do it, they're all going to be doing that the same way. And so for some queries, it is just generative AI. And for some, it is just a link in every version in between.
How difficult of a product problem is that to be like, you're guessing the intent of the user? You're like, this user probably wants a generative AI answer versus this user wants 10 blue links. How difficult of a product problem is that? And have you made any progress on solving it?
It gets easier the more queries you have. And so we actually own the patent to that back in the day at Ask of user behavior algorithms. And so that was a deep part of our search results at the time, and how we decided what to present to you. And so it always gets easier if you can relate this query to that query, and then if you know the user, you know, it gets easier as well. So I do think scale really does matter for that.
Do you anticipate this is going to be the way that all search engines handle this? Because it sounds like a pretty novel solution. Yeah. Go ahead.
I think the challenge is cost. That's one. These are very expensive answers to generate.
How much more does it cost to generate a generative AI answer versus a normal search answer?
You all know the answer. It's 20x, and I don't know what the real answer is. It's out there somewhere. I know it's a lot more. Look, it's already happening. Everybody's already decided it. And to your point, and Brad Gerstner's point, I've seen him make a lot. You know, their margin is someone else's opportunity, and I'm sure that's going to be a part of the dynamics of the category. I think, you know, we're not in that situation, and one of the things for me is focus, and I can just focus on what I can control here, where deploying those things in service of the user is a no-brainer.
Are you definitely going to do this with Microsoft, or are you thinking about building something on your own?
I think it depends on what category you're talking about. So we're talking to everybody and considering all options. We have a very deep partnership with Microsoft, so there's a lot we will do with them as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
Ranjan?
I have to ask Gen Z, the next generation, how do you pitch the Yahoo brand experience to, you know, the next, whether it's a poolsuite.net South by Southwest party, but I think at a higher level, like, especially because that idea of a destination or a portal is so foreign, unless it is, you know, an endless scrolling feed or social network and a type app. Like, what's the Yahoo pitch to the next generation?
Again, I don't think you start with portal. And I'm not even sure it gets back to that. I'm not even sure that's the right exact way to phrase what the end goal should be. I think it should be, you know, how can we help you achieve your goals with as much value added as possible, in both maybe anticipated ways and unanticipated ways, to help you do it as fast as possible to make you effective. that will transform into, you know, including using AI into all kinds of ways that we'll deliver that. Where we're starting from, this is where, you know, Alex teased me for saying we're being humble about it, but it's enough to be this size, top five internet property with, you know, this level user base with being number one or number two in these categories that we get a nail, or otherwise people will be coming after us in those categories too. If you do a great job at that, I think it always opens up other doors for where you go. And to the point on Gen Z, I definitely, you know, it's interesting. It's we're not as well known to them for sure, but that depends on the category. You'd be surprised how balanced the user base of Yahoo Finance and Yahoo Sports are, right? Because we're, you know, a lot of people's favorite fantasy platform, and we're definitely the, you know, the Bloomberg for the retail investor, essentially, right? And so, I mean, the number of and so that hits every age group. So, you know, we're starting from a better spot than you would think with that. But clearly, you know, that's part of the roadmap ahead for where we have to get to.
I think for listeners who were not around during the time Ask Jeeves, which we've been talking about, I had to look it up just to remember it. The logo was a butler, like an old-timey British butler holding his hand up, serving you the answer. I think that's what's needed to bring back, to introduce it to the next generation.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we actually moved on from Jeeves in 2006.
Oh, the butler was no more?
He was. It became just Ask.com. After ISTY, it became, he went away. Although he came back in the UK later. And we threw a party at this big search engine conference they used to throw, where we froze him in carbonite like Han Solo, had Darth Vader walk him in with stormtroopers. it was pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, that was very, you know, that was founded in 1996 and it was early days. But again, there were probably 10 public companies that were search engines in the Web 1.0 boom. And we were the only ones to make it through that wasn't Google, you know, Microsoft or Yahoo.
Rest in peace, Lycos.
A lot of things right.
Lycos, AltaVista, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because we now own that. So the brands that are under, that were inherited, that were, you know, Netscape, AltaVista, Ink2Me. I mean, you'd be surprised the number of brands that are actually buried somewhere inside this company from that era.
All right. Ranjan, you got anything else?
Sorry, I just had to ask once more. The butler was in carbonite and walked out by Darth Vader and the stormtroopers. Did I have that correct?
Because that was, you know, you could always unfreeze him.
Yeah. 2000s.
That's a very strategic choice.
2000s internet. I know. Wild 2006. Times. 2006.
2006. Yes.
I'm sad I missed that. It sounds like a good party.
Yeah.
All right, Jim. Cool. So great having you. Thank you for great swinging by. Thanks for all the insight. And hope to speak with you again soon.
Okay. See you later.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. This week on Friday, Ranjan's going to be in France. He's actually there now. So, but Reed Albergati is coming on to co-host the Friday show. So stand by for that. Semaphore technology editor Reed Albergati will be breaking down all the week's news. And we will see you next time on Big Technology Podcast.